Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. We have with us now the president and CEO of Covenant House, Kevin Ryan, and Tina Kelly, poet and former staff writer for The New York Times, also with Covenant House. They've collaborated on a new book called Almost Home, Helping Kids Move from Homelessness to Hope. In it, they tell the stories of six young adults at Covenant House locations from New Orleans to Newark and use those narratives to offer recommendations for ending youth homelessness. Welcome back, both of you, to WNYC. And actually, Tina, did I just misspeak? Are you just associated with Kevin on the book, or do you also work for Covenant House?
I work for Covenant House.
You do. And Kevin, before we get into the book, and some people may remember that Tina was here as a New York Times correspondent covering hyperlocal news in Maplewood when they started that hyperlocal project called The Local. She also wrote many of the obits after 9/11 that appeared in that Portraits in Grief series that was so moving. Kevin Ryan has been on the show before in the role of the children's advocate in the state of New Jersey, so that when kids are ensnared in the criminal justice system, like when their parents are having custody battles or child abuse cases, the kids had an official legal representative through Kevin Ryan. So now he resurfaces in his new role. And Kevin, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And I do want to ask about Sandy first. Covenant House has locations not only in Manhattan and Hell's Kitchen, but also in Atlantic City and Newark. So are you seeing an impact?
A huge impact. Covenant House has shelters in six countries, but the time that we're going through here right now in our eight shelters in New Jersey and in New York City is devastating. It's unlike anything any of us have seen in a long time. Our street outreach teams are going into the Rockaways, coastal New Jersey, Atlantic City, trying to bring kids to shelter. We evacuated dozens of kids from Atlantic City and Asbury Park before the floodwater surged in. And we just are getting our Atlantic City shelters back online now.
And Tina, could there be a silver lining if people who usually have a place to live are suddenly finding themselves out in the cold in middle-class America and, you know, upper-middle-class New York area? Is it possible that we'll see a greater awareness of the plight of the homeless and particularly, in your case, teenage homeless?
I hope so, Brian. It's scary enough to be a grown-up during a storm like that, but for kids who would often take shelter in the subways or under the boardwalk in what they call the Underwood Motel in Atlantic City, there was no place for them to go. And for regular folks to understand how scary it is to be without power and shelter for days or weeks, it gives them an understanding about what our kids go through every day.
Kevin, in the book, you write about the link between the limits to foster care and youth homelessness. Is that one of the reasons that you wrote the book? You want to highlight places where there are gaps in the system?
Yes, and we want to give people a to-do list. We want folks to be able to do something. These aren't just six stories of violence and then hope. They're stories of, we think, inspiration that give people a trajectory. How can they get involved and make a difference in kids' lives? 26,000 kids leave the foster care system in the United States every year with no family. And that could be because their families have imploded or because of poverty or drug addiction. But the bottom line is they leave foster care with nothing, and it's a very short period of time for most of them until they end up on the streets.
And what one study that you cite says 37% of kids formerly in foster care had been homeless by the age of 24.
Right.
And so, Tina, you recommend bumping up the limit of the cutoff for foster care to age 21, correct?
Right. They have better outcomes, fewer pregnancies, more likely to get jobs and complete their educations if they're under the care of the state at least till 21.
And you also portray sexual exploitation and trafficking as major issues for young adults living on the street. To what extent is this an invisible problem, and how do you try to shed light on the practice?
Well, it is an invisible problem, especially now that a lot of it's going on through the internet, through sites like Backpage.com, and a lot of the prostitution occurs in micro brothels in hotel rooms or in apartments where you don't see people just walking up and down the strip any longer. So we're hoping to get law enforcement officials involved in finding out if a victim, if a prostitute is actually a victim of trafficking, and making arrangements to treat them like a victim, not like a criminal.
And Kevin, the number of homeless teens who identify as LGBTQ, it's so disproportionate when compared with the general population.
It's so disproportionate. There are some cities where 40% of the kids on the street are gay and lesbian. When a kid comes out, if they're met with rejection or hate and then are kicked to the curb, it goes to more than the fact that they don't have shelter or that they don't have something to eat. It goes to this sense of brokenness. They feel like there's something wrong with them, and they show up at places like Covenant House or many of the runaway and homeless youth shelters across the United States, not only being hungry and tired, but also feeling broken, like there's something about their spirit, their soul, that's fundamentally wrong. Our job at Covenant House, in fact, the human community's responsibility, is to love these kids into believing themselves, accepting themselves, and moving on to the great promise of their lives.
And listeners, we have a few minutes for your phone calls. If any of you have been homeless teens or knew people who were homeless teens, call up and tell a little bit of a story and also say what you think is necessary to solve this ongoing problem. This is something we've come back to on this program occasionally over many, many years, and it is a problem that persists. So you can call with your own experience or what you think needs to be done in addition to things that have already been done. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Kevin Ryan and Tina Kelly, who have written Almost Home, Helping Kids Move from Homelessness to Hope. And Tina, would you say that there have been certain areas of progress that have been made with respect to homeless youth, homeless teens? Because, again, this is an issue that people have been aware of for decades, and there have been some steps taken.
Yes, but in the recent recession, we've seen a huge increase in the number of people calling the runaway hotline. It's been up 80% since 2002. So as families are finding economic difficulties, it's harder for them to keep their families intact, and we are seeing more kids at the shelter door.
And Kevin, this issue goes back far enough too, and some of our listeners' memories go back far enough. When scandal came to Covenant House with Father Bruce Ritter, the former head of it, and the things that he was accused of, I guess that's over 20 years ago now. But that also raised questions at the time about Covenant House as a Christian-affiliated organization and the way they treat LGBT and Q teens, and would they do anything, you know, with respect to pregnancy prevention and things like that. So where's Covenant House on that spectrum today?
Yeah, well, we write about this in the book. We talk about our commitment to kids, regardless of the color of the skin, the circumstances of their birth, or the way their heart beats, whether God made them one way or God made them a different way. Our obligation isn't to judge kids or to bring our prejudices or biases or our faith tradition to the work. Our job is to love kids into their wholeness. So it's our responsibility to bring kids into the front door of our shelters all across the United States and Canada, no questions asked, and help them heal.
Are there things that are off limits? Is it a Catholic Church-associated organization?
We're not part of the Catholic Church. Many of our Covenant Houses will do work with Catholic charities in their communities. Many do not. We have staff members from all different faith traditions, and certainly our young people are from many different faith traditions. I think that for myself, I am a person of faith, but there are many of my colleagues who are not. We've come to this work really wanting a better life for the young people whose families couldn't or wouldn't be that for them.
Nikita in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hi. So you want to tell a story of when you were in foster care, is that right?
Right.
Go ahead.
What I was saying was that being in foster care, there is no guidance or any hope as to when you age out. They don't really tell you exactly, like they don't give you a class, they don't get you ready for when you age out, in a sense of, I believe that foster care kids need a class to let them know, okay, when you get out of foster care, it's not just a matter of being in a home and getting food and getting shelter. It's a matter of, okay, you're on your own now. You need to learn how to pay your own bills, keep up with your bills. You need to know programs as far as if you need help and stuff like that. Whereas while you're in foster care, you don't get that motivation, you don't get that skill, you don't get that help or anything. It's just a matter of you reach 21, you age out, and it's okay, bye-bye, get out. You sign those papers, and you're out. That's it.
Tina, have you heard the story a million times? Do you want to talk to Nikita?
Yes. I'm sorry you had to go through that, Nikita. I know at Covenant House we do offer transitional living programs and life skills, budgeting, how to find a job, and that sort of thing. Unfortunately, we can't reach everyone who has that problem in New York City.
Right. And so, Nikita, who do you think might provide this? Should it be, you know, the government, like the Human Resources Administration that administers foster care? Should it be the foster parents who get the training? What do you think would be the best way to fill some
of
those gaps?
I think the best way is to go through the actual foster care agency, whether it be by the government making it a mandatory program for all foster kids to attend this program before aging out. Uh-huh. I think that'll be best because some foster parents honestly don't care about the foster child. It's just a matter of, okay, I have this child here. They stay, they come, they go, they do what they want. They age out, they leave, I get a new one. And then if it becomes the HRA problem, once again, it'll be a matter of HRA has a lot of programs now that help kids, and no one knows about it because there's no one to let them know.
Right.
However, if it becomes mandated for the foster child to attend this program before signing those papers, okay, I'm out, I aged out, then everyone will be able to, or at least most, kids will be able to get that program and get that educational help they need.
Nikita, thank you very much for an important call. And Eric in North Bergen, you're on WNYC. Hi, Eric.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I just recently experienced an interesting angle. I took in two teenagers through Facebook connections, and it was more than tertiary. But I have a house that was really unoccupied except for the two of us. And the two needy people that ended up responding to the available housing were both teenagers. One was transgender, and their story enlightened me quite a bit. Both of them were on their own now for several years because, you know, their parents had completely rejected them. They were not completely destitute, but that's because they had learned to survive. They had both had low-wage jobs. One had studied you know, hair and makeup. So they were making it okay before the storm, but their house was washed away and without friends and without generosity of people, I guess, like me, they would have been on the street. And
so what will happen to them eventually? Because I assume they're not going to live with you permanently.
Exactly. They'll find footing and they're on their way, hopefully, to the city. But they have, you know, potential jobs that are reopening in the Jersey Shore that they'll take advantage of. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, it got me thinking about the early prevention of the home crisis. You know, these kids they were beautiful children. Well, they're adults now, but I can't believe they were kicked out of their houses for their orientation or for their sexual, you know, the one is transgender. And it struck me, why is it legal for a parent to reject a child at any given point? There's probably laws that prevent you from kicking your child out of your house before a certain age. But that age seems to be a little bit nebulous once you're in high school. And, you know.
Yes. Well, Eric, thank you, first of all, for not that you need to hear it from me, but for your generosity in taking people into your home. And Kevin, as a former advocate for children in the legal system, how would you answer that last question that he posed?
I don't know why that's legal. I mean, you know, I don't know why adults do all sorts of horrific things to kids. It's one of the things that working with kids for 20 years still leaves me speechless. But I will say this, Eric's touched on the answer here. Government's never going to love kids the way that people and families must. And the answer here isn't a government program. The answer is making sure that young people have an adult in their lives who cares about them unconditionally and loves them. In these stories that we wrote, we definitely talk about young people who need jobs and a place to live and college scholarships. But the game changer for each of the young people in our book, whether it was this kid who played football in Texas or the young Katrina refugee in New Orleans, it was that an adult cared about this young person and wouldn't let them go. And what Eric's doing for these young people in inviting them into his life and into his home, it's more than shelter. It's saying to these kids, you matter to me.
Kevin Ryan and Tina Kelly have written Almost Home, Helping Kids Move from Homelessness to Hope. And we're out of time except to say that, Tina, I see that you've got an event coming up at Barnes & Noble, 82nd and Broadway, that Barnes & Noble, on December 6th, so it's a little ways out, but you will be joined by a special guest.
Yes, we have Mayor Cory Booker of Newark, New Jersey, who was kind enough to write the foreword to the book, will be appearing with us, and we can't wait.
Barnes & Noble, Upper West Side, on December 6th. Kevin Ryan, Tina Kelly, and Cory Booker at that time. And thank you both very much for coming on and talking about this important work.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks,
God bless.
Brian.
Happy Thanksgiving.